Morning. I'm Brenda. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May the 17th, 1994. My home group is the Three Legacies group of alcoholics, Huntsville, Alabama, Area 1, Alabama, and Northwest Florida. I have some of my friends here. And that's the good thing. I have friends today. I don't know about y'all, but I had run everybody off. And to be invited somewhere to speak, what an opportunity. Our delegate, Jim S., I told him this morning, he turned my name in. I said, Jim, I don't know whether to slap you or hug your neck. So I did both. But it is an honor and a privilege. Jim watched me come in. My sponsor's here. Some of my sponsees are here. And I was mad at the world. I was full of rage. You took away my best friend that was alcohol. There was no living and let live in my book. I did good just to not punch somebody out, you know. I would come in and sit down, and people would come up next to me, and I'd have so much rage. My arms would be crossed, and, you know, the meeting would be on gratitude. And I was not grateful for nothing, and I let everybody know it. People would just kind of trend away from me. And I went to my sponsor, and I said, I have no friends. And she said, you need to learn how to be a friend, Brenda. And I didn't know how to do that. They're all in cliques. Get your own clique. And I went around trying to get people to be in my clique. Nobody wanted to be in my clique. Matter of fact, one of the women that I sponsor, she just passed away. She made me so mad one night that I took the big book and popped her upside the head. And I saw my sponsor that night at the meeting, and I told her what I did, and I said, I don't owe her an amend, do I? And she said, yes, you do. So I learned early on, stick my hands in my pocket, because I will punch you out if you piss me off. Happy 4th of July, everyone. Isn't it? We can be happy, joyous, and free today. Last night, the flag ceremony and all that, I mean, I just had tears in my eyes to see all of us that were falling down drunks, and we found a way out. And it's only through my sponsor telling me the truth about myself when I go bitching to her about, you know, my brother's not doing it right. Can you believe what my sister-in-law did? Blah, 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 blah. And she's like, Brenda, pray for them. Hell no, I don't want to pray for them. I want them to do it my way. You know, page 60 through 63 in the big book, that was always me wanting to run the show. You know, wanting to control everything. Wanting to fix, manage, and control. That's my biggest things. And over here in Atlanta, I really learned how to just live and let live. In the traffic, we drove over here and trying to catch the bus, get off of the bus. Where is this? Where is that? You know, and I ended up in a women's meeting yesterday way down in the basement. I didn't know how many levels were over there at that GWCC, you know. We did a lot of walking. But you get to meet a lot of people. I've met people from everywhere. I met a guy from Russia, and he was trying to talk to me, and I was like, hey. Everybody was saying, where are you from? And I said, Boston. When GSO called me, I was at the gym, and they asked me to be on this panel. I mean, I was just overwhelmed with gratitude. I just started crying, and I said, yes, I would love to do that. What an opportunity. Then I had to look. My ego went way up. The Omni appearing, Brenda Church. Now, that's where I go with my alcoholic mind. God always keeps me the right size. That's the good thing about it. When I get way up here, he always just kind of brings me back down. And then I always think, well, I'm not good enough to be on this panel. What am I doing here? And I did a lot of praying this morning, a lot of rehearsing. And I finally gave up, got on my knees, took the third and seventh step prayer, and it's going to be what it's going to be. And, you know, live and let live, I have to practice that daily. If I'm spiritually fit, I can do that. I drive the handicap bus, the short bus. And I put my sponsor down as a reference. And when they called, her husband's in the program too, Richard. And Deborah was just busting out crying. I mean, laughing. Can you believe what Brenda put in for? The handicap bus. Because number one, I have no patience with people. Number two, I have road rage. I pulled a gun on somebody when I was drinking down in Florida because they cut over in front of me. I don't carry my gun when I drive the handicap people. And they look forward to seeing me. You know, they're like, oh, we're glad it's you. And, you try to help somebody with a walker, but a lot of people want their independence. And you know how long it takes to load a walker up or a wheelchair? I'm like, here, lady, let me help you. Don't help me. Like, get your ass on the bus. I've got a time schedule here. And in the traffic, you know, some days I have to look and see if there's like a sign cut over in front of me. Nobody wants to be behind a bus. And so they're going to cut over in front of you and turn with no signal. So live and let live. And my job at work, you know, it seems like they're always picking on me. You know how your supervisor's always making you do all the work and you want to get in everybody else's business. We tally up how many people we carry and I'm always got the most and I have to look through the stack. Why am I having to do all the work? You know, suit up and show up. That's a good way to make my amends to everyone because I hurt a lot of people and I do not know who those people are. You know, I ran you off the road. I was rude to you in a restaurant. Today I try not to do that. I call the waitresses, hey, nurse, we need another drink over here. You know, stuff like that. I don't have to act that way today. And I'm grateful for this program, you know. My mother, this is a good one. My mother's 82 years old, and when she was 80, she decides she wants a new car. I'm like, Mama, you don't need a new car. Yes, I do. I want a new car. Do not argue with an 80-year-old woman. You will lose. So she got the new car, and I'm grateful she did because she let me borrow it to drive over here. I got one of these. God is good. I heard a speaker say over at a roundup, if it's odd, it's God. And I've really been paying attention to that because I have some odd things happen in my life, you know. It's just God is so good. And my mom let me use that car. And my mother was a little sick before last Sunday we got ready to come over here. And she'd been feeling a little puny. And I said, Mama, I'm not going over there unless you see a doctor. I'm not going to the doctor until you get back from your trip. I know how important it is to you. So we argued back and forth, and I finally just said, you know, when Daddy was sick, I told him on his dying bed, I would take care of you, so please, please go. I'm not going. I wonder where I get this stubbornness from. So I finally, one of the ladies I sponsor is a doctor. And I said, Dr. Nancy's going to be there. Oh, I like Dr. Nancy. I'll go. Well, I told a lie because Dr. Nancy was in North Carolina. Some things change, some don't. But she went and she was okay. I just wanted to make sure she wasn't dehydrated or anything like that. I can't leave my mom if she's sick, you know. I did make a promise to my dad. I can be responsible today. And Facebook, boy, that's a good one. Live and let live. Yeah, I try to refrain from commenting on some people's stuff. Right when you go to just tell them like it is and all this stuff, it's like, no, no, you do not even need into that. You know, let other people do what they need to do. You know, that's the thing. Rule number 62, don't take yourself so damn serious. Live and let live. All these slogans mean so much to me. And the main thing is mind your own damn business. We got a guy that comes to fellowship, and that's what he says all the time. You know, I got to keep my side of the street clean. When I'm looking at everybody else taking your inventory, they're not doing it right. They're not doing this. I can't believe she's not doing that, especially in a business meeting when all this crap comes up and you think you have a good idea and you're like, oh, I've got a good suggestion. We had these small cups, and all I wanted, everybody kept getting up and getting more coffee. Why don't we get 16-ounce cups? I brought that up. No. Well, this makes sense, 16-ounce cups versus 10-ounce cups. No, this is the way it's always been, Brenda. We're not changing. I thought this program was about change. It is, but we're not changing that. The other night in our home group, we were reading the chapter Two Wives. And it's a good chapter. It can be two wives, two husbands, two partners, two whoever you need it to, you know. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. And on page 118, it says, patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Show them these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from Him. Live and let live is the rule. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. And I found that so true in my life. And thank you for a wonderful opportunity. I love all of y'all. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. You know, it's in AA is one thing that it's always the sweet ones. They look so sweet and they turn out to be so angry, you know. And we have our second speaker is Jacob B. from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Jacob Boudreaux, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's April the 2nd of 2006. My home group is the Goodwood Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, also known as the Scout Hut, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It meets at 8 o'clock on Thursday nights. It's an open discussion group. It's a home group. It's more than a meeting. It's a group of people that I share intimate details about my life with and know me inside and out. It's more than just a gathering place. We go out to eat after. We call it family dinner. It's always a good time, so if you're in Baton Rouge on a Thursday, come and see us, and we'll bring you out and show you around. I was talking to Brenda before we got up here, and she says, I said, well, where are you from? She says, Huntville, Alabama. She says, well, where are you from? Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And we were like, are you an Alabama fan? Yeah. Are you an LSU fan? Yeah. She says, well, live and let live. I said, you're right. You're right about that. Before I really get into what I'm going to talk about, I always like to identify, you know, I'm a recovered alcoholic, and it talks about that in the foreword to the first edition. You know, it says to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of the big book, you know. And I was in and out of the program from the time I was 16 years old until I was 20 years old, whenever I finally got sober. And I was showing up today at meetings. I was making 180 meetings in 90 days, not just 90 and 90. And I wondered why I can never get sober. And it talks about it in the 12 and 12. It says, you know, we have made a beginning by the admission of alcoholism and by attending a few AA meetings. That's a good start indeed, but it's bound to be a far cry from permanent sobriety and continued useful life. I had the admission of alcoholism down at a very early age. I was making all the meetings in the world, but yet I continued to get drunk. I didn't understand why I didn't do steps 2 through 12. And as a result of going through 2 through 12 with a sponsor after that, I've never had to drink again, and that's a miracle if you're anybody like me. I thought for a long time that if I got sober, once I got sober, life would change for me. Life does not change once I get sober. Life stays the exact same way it always did. I go through divorce and bankruptcy and cancer. I fall in love. I fall out of love. I get hired. I get fired. I rode in Mardi Gras sober. I go to tailgates and concerts and music festivals. I buried my dad over a year ago, and I've lost the number one child in sobriety as well. And through all these things, I have not even had to drink over it. And more than anything, I haven't even thought about drinking over it. You know, and that's what being in place in that position. And that's what they talk about, being placed in that position of neutrality. The problem, whenever it comes to alcohol, has been removed. I'm not going to say life has been great in all other areas of my life, but from where alcohol is concerned, the problem no longer exists as long as I remain spiritually fit. And so I was driving over here. I'm running on like 3 hours of sleep right now, so I'm going to try to do the best that I can. But I had Googled, you know, live and let live, because I heard the slogan over and over, and I ended up reading this. It says, live and let live refers to focusing on your own issues and problems rather than getting wrapped up in someone else's problems and upset about the things others do. Focus on your own sobriety. You can't change other people except by example, and then it will still be their choice to change. This saying is to help you let go of resentment's anger about what others do. And my old grand sponsor always says we're storytellers in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we tell each other stories. All the same stories, just different details. And I have a story to talk about. Last year, you know, I had gone through a lot of tragedy within that year. And last 4th of July, I had a lot of old ideas, a lot of old prejudice about my conception of a higher power. You know, it wasn't a higher power that I could really do business with. And I put myself in a position where I couldn't fail, you know, and I was miserable. And I remember talking to my sponsor about it. We did some inventory work. And early on in sobriety, I would go to a silent retreat. It's on the Mississippi River. It's in a place called Convent, Louisiana. And on this property, there's these 100-year-old oak alley trees. There's a plantation. There's a school. You get your own room. It's complete silence for 3 days. And I'd go to this place, and I really found my conception and got connected with a higher power. Well, last year I was struggling with a lot of different areas in my life, not just alcohol or whatever, you know, where life comes in. And I ended up contacting those people because I got too busy for that, you know, life. You know, I have too much going on. I ended up contacting the captain of the group, and I emailed him, and he says, look, we have one spot available. It's yours if you want it. So I drove over to this place on a whim, you know, got the spot, and we go into silence on a Thursday night, and the next morning, this priest comes up and he starts doing this, this kind of like moderation. 4 times a day, he does a moderation, gives you something to think about, something to pray about, something to meditate on, and then you go to the next one and so on, and you rest. And he got up there and he starts talking. And in the middle of talking, he starts reading out of this book, and he starts saying, each pressure group, if it's strong enough, self-righteously imposes its will upon the rest. We were right, you were wrong. And I'm like, that sounds familiar, you know? And I'm like looking around, I'm like, and it hit me. I was like, that's the 12 and 12. This guy's reading the 12 and 12, you know? And I had wrote out a 4-step the night before, and I said, man, I need to talk to this guy, you know, and the only way I can talk to him is do this, I have to do a confession with him. And I haven't done a confession in like 30 years, you know, so I ended up signing up to do this meeting with him, and I got in there, and I said, you're either in the program or you help a lot of us. Which one is it? He says, I am, and I do. And I said, look, I don't know if you've ever done a 4-step, but I've got some things written down that I'm not okay with, and I need to talk, you know. And he says, well, what do you got? And we started to talk about it, and we went over the process. And he says that you think those Ten Commandments are a set of rules, and if you don't follow those rules, you're going to be punished. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I see it. He says, those aren't rules. Those Ten Commandments are just like your 12 steps. They're a set of guidelines as practice as a way of life is going to bring the desired results of happiness and peace. Wow, you know? And he says, you think that you've done so bad that you can't be forgiven for the things that you've done. So you think that you're that powerful, that you're God, because that's what you're doing. You're playing God all over again. And I'm like, wow, you know. And he looked down at the ground. And he looked up at me. He says, I want you to hear something, Jacob. I want you to hear very clearly what I'm about to say. And I was like, what is it? You know, like it's going to be profound. He says, you're not that fucked up. And this is a priest, you know. I'm like, whoa, what did you just say? And he says, you heard me. You're not. You know, nobody's exempt from the human experience. The reason why I read that literature to you, to everybody here, is because everybody can relate with it. You just use alcohol to kill the pain, but everybody struggles with some different thing in other areas of their life. You can't take away from their human experience, and I can't take away from your human experience. And that's how the process is supposed to work. And I said, what do I need to do, like 1,000 Our Fathers? And he's like, no, you've beat yourself up enough. Go sit quietly and think about what we talked about. I was like, all right, I could do that then. And another story I want to talk about, you know, the reason why I got here at 8:30 last night, I was supposed to come in on Thursday. And this past week, I lost my uncle. He was in and out of AA for 30 years, and he passed away with 5 years of sobriety on Sunday. And I used to drink with him. I used to run with him and to watch his life transform. And I ended up calling him on a Friday, last Friday before Father's Day, just to call him because I knew he was sick and reach out to him. And he said he was in the hospital, so I went to the hospital the next day, and I got there about 10 o'clock at night, and I sat down with him and we talked. And I said, you know, your kids would be really angry if they knew you were here and you didn't tell them. And he says, you're right. Why don't you call Jessica, my daughter, and tell her I'm here, but tell her I'm okay. And the last thing I told him was, happy Father's Day. You're a great father, and I love you. And I left, you know, and I didn't see him again. But after he passed away, his daughter contacted me, and she was crying. She says, I don't understand how you can go through burying your dad last year, how you had the courage to go through that. You know, people watch us, you know. They pay attention to what we do. Even though we're not aware of it, they watch what we do. So I always remember that. When could be a maximum service to God and the people about us is the question, you know. And she says, I'm so thankful that you called me and told me that he was in the hospital, because every day this past week I went to the hospital and sat with him. And I got to be there and spend the last few days of his life with him. And, you know, that was a blessing in itself. But we ended up having to drive from Baton Rouge an hour and a half south to the Gulf, wherever I'm from, to the swamps pretty much. And we did a memorial ceremony, and he was cremated, and the guy moderating the ceremony was an AA, and he asked all friends of Bill W. to step forward. And about 15 people stepped forward, and he says, can we open this with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer? And we said the serenity prayer, and he asked if anybody wanted to share, family or friends, and we all got to share a little bit. And he says, can everybody hold hands and can we close with the Lord's Prayer? Because that's how Jerry would have wanted it, my uncle, you know, and it was like a meeting. And that's the way to go, you know. The reason why I tell that story is because there was a story about him and letting go. And that's the thing that really resonates with me is letting go of other people's ideas, actions, you know, because you can't control anybody. We have to let go. And he would tell a story about his son riding a bicycle, and he would run with him. You know, he was on a three wheeler, and he'd run with him after he took those training wheels off. But he didn't want to let him go because he was scared that he was going to fall. And then finally, he ran with him and he let him go, and he toppled over. And then he got up again, and he tried it all over again. And finally, he let him go. And he's not the one that taught his kid how to ride. His kid did that on his own. You know. We have to make our own way. We have to develop our own story. Every day is a learning experience, you know, and thus we grow. We don't build a relationship with a higher power when everything's going right in life. It's whenever calamity happens, despair happens. And that's how I enlarge my spiritual life, is by work in self-sacrifice for other people in those areas. Whenever tragedy strikes, I have to give of myself in order to find something greater than me. You know, I always use the analogy of the circle and the triangle: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, unity, service, recovery. You have to have all those things or you're going to fall. I'm sitting on a three-legged bar stool, and if you remove one of those legs, what happens is I tumble. It's the same thing with me and God. If I'm not connected to you, I'm not connected to God. If I'm not connected to God, I'm not connected to you. And if I remove one of those three elements, I'm going to fall and I'm going to fail. I need you just as much as you need me. And I love y'all, and I'm very honored to be here with y'all on this panel. So thank y'all.
Thank you so much, Jacob. It's really touching. Yeah. And, you know, we have quite a bit of time left. So, you know, just bring it home. And with Matt Jay from Santa Barbara, California.
My name is Matt Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Eva S., who invited me. It's an honor to participate at an international convention. It's amazing. Well, you got it all here. You got the hottie, you got the sweet, and you have the intellectual, and now you got the fat, bald guy to kind of... So live and let live. So I worked that in. Now I can just go on to whatever. So, but... you know, I used to drink. I liked everything from Southern Comfort to Sears vulcanizing glue and everything in between. I never wanted to be in my skin. I never liked me. I always wanted to be you or where you were and everything else. And it goes back to the old days with the radio. I never liked the station I was listening to, and I was always punching the buttons. And my life was always like that. By the time I got here to AA, I was 21 years old. I was blacking out, getting arrested, suicidal, and crashing cars, and I always wanted to be a part of something, and I came into AA on the shirt tails of my old man. He brought me in, and I was. Actually, he brought me into the Pacific Group, and you know, I had the desperation of a drowning man, and what seemed to be a flimsy reed turned out to be the hand of Clancy. He pulled me out of the water, and we walked down the the path, and he put his arm around me, and he said, "Do you know how to play third base, kid?" And I got sober. That's really pretty much it. My first year I got sober playing sober softball, basically. You know, I mean, we played softball there and I got into it. But, you know, like I said, I when I got here, I always wanted to be a part of something until I got here. And then I wanted to keep you at arm's length because I didn't want you to get to know me. Oh, before I forget, I want to thank Santa Barbara for being here. And Atlantic for being here. New York, look at two from New York. And then, North Carolina, down there. So, my friends, and then the rest of the SoCal crew. But I got sober May 27th, 1973. I got sober at 21. I'm 42 years sober, and I'm 63 years old. So I got, if this was Las Vegas, I'd be going 21 the whole time, right? You know, it's like I got some stuff going there, but at least in my own head, right? And it's like big deal. And so I got here. You know, what's funny is last night about 3 a.m, I just ran through this, and it was 20 minutes of everything. And now I can't think of anything I was thinking about last night. The talk I gave, right? And my home group is the Thursday night Men with No Legs, Men Stag, and we're in Santa Barbara on the sand. You know, you walk out, you walk across the street, and you walk right onto the sand. So we're right on the edge of the continent, And we're at the sobriety capital of the world. We have the best central office in, you know, in the world. And Pam runs our central office. So, so with that, I'll get back into it here a little bit. I didn't fit in, I didn't belong, and I didn't want to be involved. And I didn't for the first 9 months until I had an epiphany when I got pulled over carrying stuff that is illegal still. And they didn't check the car, and they came back and gave us our driver's license and said, have a good time. And it could have been something called interstate, you know, trafficking or something, I don't know. But I came back and I got active in AA. And all the stuff that I'd heard before about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I have to steal a line from Chris P. And it's like, when I got here, you know, I wanted what you had, but I wanted you to front it to me, you know? I didn't want to do that, you know, all that action shit. I didn't want any of that kind of stuff, you know? I wanted to live and let live. And, the line about living life on life's terms, I couldn't think of anything worse. You know, it's like, why would I want to do that? You know, I mean, that's why I got loaded. An easy does it and, you know, one day at a time and all that kind of stuff. And none of that made sense. But it seemed like it kind of worked for you and I wanted to, you know, try it, but I wasn't willing to buy in. And so I kind of cruised around and then I had my little epiphany, thanks to the Reno police. And I came back and I got active and I did what they always talk about. I took the contrary actions. I did the thing that I thought was the stupidest thing in the world. And that was I became a greeter on the Saturday night meeting, which, of course, is date night, unless you don't date, you know, and I didn't date. But I always held it out there like I would. I may have a date, I told my sponsor. And he goes, no, you're not. Just go and, you know, shake hands. And I shook hands. And I did that for 6 months, and I had the greatest time. The gal that was the secretary was an ex-CIA. And she turned out to be it's kind of like what you're talking about, you can't judge a book by its cover. And she was the smartest, funniest woman I'd ever met and had the greatest stories. And we became really great friends. But I inadvertently learned everybody's name in my group at that time and didn't know it. And it wasn't until I met a guy named Cecil, which was kind of funny enough in Southern California, but... And Cecil was one of these guys that had come, the National Council had sent him to AA, and he had he was just checking out a meeting, he had his pockets filled with leaves, and he was going to try AA, and if it didn't work, he was just going to eat leaves and walk to Oregon, you know, so. So I nabbed it, so he was like, I go, hey, you know, you want to go to, and in 73, they always talk about it, you know, they didn't have a lot of young people, you know, they were all fat and bald and wore glasses like Jim over there. He's skinny. But it wasn't much to shoot for. And I said, but meet me at the Thursday night meeting and I'll show you around. And I took him to that meeting and I walked around and I sat down afterwards and realized I knew everybody's name in this room. And I, all of a sudden, that next thing that they talk about when you kind of go from being a taker to kind of a giver or just that feeling of helping somebody else came over me. And I thought, God, this is what, I had to have those kind of experiences because I'm not one of those people that get it when I read it. You know, it's kind of, I got to learn by mistake. I got to make I got to screw up and be a goof I learned humility through, you know, humiliation kind of thing. It's like, I don't know what not to do. So I did that. And then, you know, so since then I've done, I'm one of those ones, I believe in group conscience. I believe in the spiritual link of a sponsor that you get that when I would go to my sponsor and say, I got this problem and they'd say, do this. And I think that's stupid. You know, it's like I got fired from a job. And in the beginning of summer, and I thought, I'm going to get unemployment. I'll go buy a new surfboard and I'll surf. And I had about, you know, back at, this was in the 70s. It was like, I had about $700 in the bank. I thought, $75 rent. I can go all summer eating and, you know, doing everything. And, uh, And so I went to my, you know, so a friend of mine called me and says, hey, I got a great job in the Valley. You should come out and apply. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to go to the Valley. And I hung up. And he was talking to my sponsor. You know, I saw him at the meeting that night, and he was talking to my sponsor, you know. And you know how when you think they're talking about you, you know, but they're really not. But then in those poignant cases, they are. And so he just said, you will apply. And I went out there and applied. And it was selling VW and Porsche parts, and I got the job, and it that was 39 years ago, and I've been there ever since. And so, I don't know. That's one. Live and let live. Huh? Got to keep throwing it in, right? So I just, you know, so when I got here, I was 21. You know, I didn't fit in. I didn't belong. People, all these old guys were coming up and going, you're so lucky to be here so young. You got the rest of your life ahead of you. And I used to think, yeah, great. Only 30 or 40 more years of this shit. You know, I mean, it's like, I couldn't think of anything worse at that time. You know, I mean, I really had just come in at that, you know, in you know, 73 or whatever, the early 70s, the line was, you know, the hip line was kind of like, hey, I'm going to get my shit together, you know, kind of stuff. And I really came in here just to do that. And I think it happens, I guess, after 45 or something. I don't know. It hasn't happened at 42. But I keep thinking I'm going to kind of get it together and stuff. And that's what's so ironic about live and let live, which is all of these great, there's, you know, all these lines that are in AA and all these words like, you know, patience, tolerance, kindness, and love, and gratitude, and stuff like that. You know, they're all those, you know, kind of, you know, one word action things that have to be learned, for me, had to be learned. You know, it's like stuff that was still contrary to my own natural instincts. My natural instincts are the, you know, the lie, steal, and cheat, you know, kind of thing. And if it's sitting there, they, you know, I was talking to somebody at, the great thing about going to one of these conventions is you know, all you got to do is see a tag, right? And you got a new friend. And because my first sponsor told me, he goes, go in the meeting and go up to three new people you don't know, stick out your hand and say, hi, you know, my name is Matt, what is your name? And then make small talk. And, you know, and I said, yeah, that was great, Art, but by that time, I had reduced my small talk down to, have you scored anything lately? And I'm hungry, you know, was about the only. And he said, I'll teach you the key to conversation. He goes, you go up to a person and you ask them a question about themselves. If they're any good, they give you 15 minutes. And try it here. I swear to God, you can't, you know, you got to learn how to get away from them is the trick, you know. It's like, you know, so I asked this girl, I said, what do you, you know, she goes, well, then I moved to Mexico. And I was like, it's like, just pass me an onion ring, will you? Christ. I just, you know, I was like, I don't want to hear the whole story. So, but it's a great thing. And that's what, you know, I learned to make conversation in here. And I think that that's the wonderful thing about the international. You can go anywhere and you really walk up to somebody and everybody's willing to tell you what their home group is, where they're from, what they do, you know, does their, you know, they got a hat that lights up. Pam, you know, so, you know, and I just, and I love that. And this is my ninth international. So I know, huh? I learned early to go to conventions. I've always was active and gone to conventions and have done that, and I've had great, you know, I've had really great conventions, and I've had kind of lonely conventions. But generally, it's because I'm a loner, you know, kind of stuff. I'm used to being alone because I'm always alone, kind of stuff. It is one of those things that I never, and it might be because I'm Swedish, you know. I don't know. They know how the Scandinavians. There was a funny story I heard about Scandinavians, about the six Scandinavians that get marooned. Two Danes and two Norwegians and two Swedes, and they're marooned, and the Danes go, I know, we'll design a boat. And the two Danes, and then they said, and the Norwegians said, hey, we'll build it. And they looked at the Swedes and they said, what are you going to do? And they go, we've never been introduced. You know, it's like, so that was, you know, I mean, I came from my father's side is full-blooded Swedes. We never talked. You know, I mean, you bumped into each other, you just apologized, and, you know, you kind of just, so. So I just, you know, this, it's been 14 minutes, and Christ, I can't go. I don't know what to, you know, it's like, we're going to, it's going to be free coffee at the bar out there here pretty soon. I think it's like we're going to have to go. So basically, I've, you know, everything that I've done and everything that I've got in my life is because of AA. I learned how to work here. I learned how to get up to an alarm. I got this great job. When I got here, I'm severely dyslexic. I was a functioning illiterate when I got here. I couldn't read or write. I learned how to read in AA. Yeah, I know, huh? Or it sounded like somebody clapped over there, so that was what that was about. I learned how to read. I learned how to read Tarzan books, you know, Edgar Rice Burroughs, Tarzan's, and John Carter on Mars. And then, you know, worked my way to the sports page and the TV guide. And, you know, I had to pace myself. I didn't want to get right into the big book. And so I just... But I did learn how to read, and I'll tell you, that has been probably one of the greatest things that I've done, which is, once I kind of learned how to read, is to sit down, they talk about it in page top of 89, where I can never paraphrase it, but nothing more ensures sobriety than, you know, intensive work with another alcoholic. And the thing that I like about it is it's something that shouldn't be missed. And it's really the truth. There is nothing better in the world than sitting and going through those first steps, you know, with somebody and trying to, you know, the second step, when I came in here, I thought, my father's Swedish and my mother was nuts. And so I always, you know, when I would drink, I could always see the lunatic fringe out here. You know, I mean, I knew it was over here. And that was one of the fears that brought me in. But, lost it there, but I just, you know, though when I came in, I didn't realize that that working with other people would have the benefit that it had. So when I sit down, second step, Christ Almighty, and the second step says, power greater than yourself, give a story to Sandy, and I thought what they meant was the insanity of being nuts. I knew that was there, and one of the reasons why I stuck around at the beginning is because I wanted to not be insane. I wanted to stay, you know, I thought if I stayed sober, then maybe I wouldn't go crazy. And that was my big fear. And it wasn't until, like I said, till I got into the book that I realized that it's the insanity of the first drink. It's not, you know, and the benefit of that. And so I have been blessed over these years that I've got to work with other people. And I've got this, you know, the second paragraph on page 89 talks about that when you work with other people, you see this fellowship grow up around you. And I have had that happen. I have this great fellowship, you know, around me in Santa Barbara. And I got sober in the Pacific Group, and I still have a lot of great friends in the Pacific Group. And it's just, I've been a lucky guy all my life. I've been blessed with all the stuff. My first sponsor told me to set goals. And I set goals. And my first goals were I just wanted to be a good surfer and a part of society and kind of learn how to fit in. And basically, inadvertently, I became a good member of society and I learned how to fit in. I never really did get the good surfer part. You know, it's like once you start working, you just don't surf like you used to, you know. So now I'm trying to become a good golfer and not spray the ball at Charlie when we're out there, you know. So, but I've learned. I've had all of these gifts given to me from having a great job to I got married in AA. I found a girl I prayed for and got her. And we had 13 great years, and then I only had to pay alimony for about another 8. And you know, kind of stuff. You know, it's one of those things that I'd taken a bullet for her. And now I live and let live, and I'll let her take her own bullet. And got to work that in, right? But I got remarried, and I married a gal in the program, and it was one of those things where I'd made up my mind. I thought, you know, I was praying. It had been about you know, I'd gone through this divorce at 20 years sober, and I went absolutely nuts. You know, I thought, how could this happen to me? I work with all these people. You know, it's like going all, you know, because it is all about me. And she just walked out in the backyard and said, you know, this is your dream, not mine. And she packed her stuff and kind of moved out. And she had been in Al-Anon and just dropped out of that and just went. So I just kind of went crazy, and I had to come back and start working the steps again, and I had to get back into the program. And, you know, the poor guys that I sponsored at the time, they would call me up and say, you know, I'm having trouble with this. And I said, you think you got trouble? You know what she did to me now? So. Fortunately, there was a revolt, and about half of them left. You know, they thought, oh, is that what sobriety is about? You know, it's like, I got to get a new sponsor. And only a few stuck with me and protected me, and they took care of me, the Handsome Brothers and, you know, kind of stuff. They really looked out after me. And so, you know, but I had made it. So about 4 years into it, I'd kind of come out of it, and I started, you know, my prayer. And I, you know, I say, you know, I want to be just a good dad and, you know, a good AA and a good worker. And, oh, by the way, if you can run across a gal who's, you know, kind of low miles, no puppies, and lives close to Santa Barbara because I don't like to drive, you know, kind of stuff. That'd be great. And so I went to, you know, I went down to L.A. to go to a Vince Joe's 25-year AA party. And I looked around across the room, and it was like all of a sudden there she was, and this arc, you know, went there, and she came over to me, and I at my work negotiate $1 million deals selling auto parts, you know, to big parts places and stuff like that, and I'm not usually I don't stumble for words too much unless it's about the steps, obviously, but it's like, what step was I talking about? But she came over and started talking to me, and I started I couldn't think of anything, and I said, if you're in Santa Barbara, call me, you know, and she went, what? So I had to go down to L.A. again, and I called her, and I said, are you available for dinner? And she said, God, I'm all the way down here. Do you mind? And I said, oh, shit, I don't mind driving. So, you know, we go out for dinner, and it was like one of those great dinners where I sit down and ask her one question, and then she talks for 3 straight hours. And I did, you know, I just did, you know, I was like, she'd take a breath every once in a while for me to ask another question. And then it was love, right? And so we, you know, we go out, and she goes, you know, I got a couple of kids. I go, I love kids. And, you know, so, but she was still in that way, and I thought, I better take care of business. So I went in and took care of stuff. So we don't have any more puppies, but we blended a family together, and you know what? We had it great from the very beginning because, you know, we were both our kids' advocates, but we both were big in AA, and we got involved and we went to meetings, and, you know, we didn't go to every meeting together. You know, some nights she went on Wednesdays and I went on Thursdays, and, you know, sometimes we got to go Friday because they had daycare and, you know, and that kind of stuff. But we went to a lot of meetings, and we work with a lot of people, and we have a good time. And it's never one of those questions where I go, hey, you know, it's not one of those things. Nobody gets their feelings hurt when they go, hey, should I got to go meet this new guy? And she goes, okay, all right. And, you know, it'll be a sandwich for you or later or whatever. And it's the same kind of a thing, except for when it's me. And she goes, I got to go with a newcomer. I go, what about my sandwich? And it's like, I got to make that myself. So, you know, but we have that, and, you know, we're really lucky, and you know, like I said, we live in Santa Barbara. It's the, you know, it's this beautiful, it's kind of like, it's the, Santa Barbara's one of the most beautiful places you can ever be, and, you know, you go out there, and I swear, I don't know about you guys, I take it for granted all the time. I walk out there and think, oh, Christ, it's like fog here, But, you know, a lot of times I got to pinch myself and just remember I'm blessed. And, you know, everything that I do, I've been blessed in. And, you know, there was, you know, not, I don't know there's a lot of newcomers, but there was a great line. There's a great speaker named Norm Alpe, and he had the greatest lines. And he would say, if you hear a line you like, steal it. Give the guy credit three times, and then it's yours. And, and when I was new, I sat in the back and stole lines and threaded, you know, a talk together with that, you know, kind of stuff. And, you know, kind of stuff. And it was a way that I kind of stayed in, you know, in the game, you know, kind of stuff. And the funny thing, the funny sad thing is now is that in my life, I drive down the road thinking about lines and thinking how it's going to work into my talk now. You know, I think, am I just old? You know, is that what happens when you get old and, you know, in sobriety? Or, you know, you get a lot of times, like, all you think about is AA and how the lines work, you know, kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. But you know, like I said, I've been blessed. I got a great life, and I've been given everything, you know, in life. But I have to believe that it was because my sponsor told me that you set your goals, and it's because I have now in 42 years, I go to 2 to 3 meetings a week. Still, I work with new guys. I learned how to get through into the book, and I like what you were saying. I don't have book retention. You know, I don't have meeting retention. I don't have book retention. So I got to go to meetings and I got to go to book studies and stuff like that because I can't remember the book. I can't, you know, I mean, I only know the few, you know, on page 132, it talks about, you know, we are not a glum lot and we absolutely insist on enjoying ourselves, you know, so. And, you know, I mean, I got those little things going, but, you know, I mean, but that's, page 69's got sex, and then something about, to the wives, about, let father have his head, or something, I don't know. Wait. But that's in relationship to live and let live. It's like, forgive father, you know, and not, but that's not to say that I don't sit and contemplate that a lot and wish my wife would comply a little more to that. But so I'll, you know, I'd like to, like I said, I, it's really an honor to be here. And I like to say, I heard a great line. And that was, is I was obsessed with everything when I came in here, whether it was alcohol or drugs or sex or ESPN or Häagen-Dazs ice cream. And the only thing that I really ever learned to work to moderation was the steps. You know, it's like, everything, you know, I mean, everything else, I've been given back 1,000 times more than I've put into this. And it's just by showing up. And it doesn't mean that I know, you know, it's like I've had commitments and stuff, but I've been giving so much more than I've really given to this. And I know, you know, I mean, it's like, I know there has to be more. And I, you know, intellectually I know about it. And I keep thinking, well, I got to pace myself at 42 years. What am I going to do this next 10 year? You know, it's like, I got to give more then. But, you know, I've been given so much here, and I know that. And I've just been, like I said, I've been blessed, and I've got a great life. And it's really the lights in the eyes that keep me coming back. So thanks.